Rosale staggered as a section of rail 5 feet to his left disintegrated. Something slammed into his shoulder with brutal force, nearly knocking him to his knees, and he heard shrieks from the waist of the ship, where the bulk of the broadside had gone home. His right hand clutched convulsively at the undamaged rail in front of him, keeping him on his feet somehow, and he turned forward. His left shoulder felt broken, his arm dangling uselessly at his side, but there was no sign of blood, and a corner of his brain wondered what had hit him. There was no time to worry about that, however, and he stumbled forward to lean on the poop deck rail, staring toward the bow. Most of the enemy's fire had gone in low, punching into Grand Vicar Morris's gun deck. From the screams, it must have inflicted Shan Wei's own lot of casualties, he thought, then reminded himself not to assume the worst. A wounded man's shrieks could be loud enough for two or three, after all. But at least some of those round shot had plowed across the upper deck. Unlike Carizian ships, Grand Vicar Morris mounted no guns on her forecastle, but she did mount 10 on the upper deck in the waist, 5 in either broadside. Now there were only 2 in action to starboard. Rosale's jaw tightened. One of the 3 silenced 12-pounders was permanently disabled, dismounted by a direct hit. The other 2 appeared to be intact, but most of the 16 men who'd manned them were down, either dead or wounded. Of the 48 men who'd crewed all 3 pieces, no more than a dozen were on their feet, and they were all busy dragging dead and wounded crewmates away from the pair of still serviceable guns. Grand Vicar Morris was barely 160 feet long, yet billowing smoke, most of it rolling down from the enemy's guns now, made it difficult to pick out details forward of the waist. From what he could see, though, at least another half dozen or so seamen and soldiers serving as shipboard infantry were down as well. And that was only the upper deck. There was no telling how many men had been killed or wounded on the gun deck. Yet, despite the screams and the blood, Rosale's other gunners were still in action. They were firing independently now, as quickly as each crew could reload, without the disciplined unanimity of controlled broadsides. The cannon's thunder was a hellish cacophony, an almost uninterrupted succession of bellowing discharges. Accuracy had to be suffering as each gun captain fired blindly into the smoke at whatever he thought was the appropriate point in the ship's roll, but they were firing, and even through the bedlam he heard shouts of encouragement from officers and petty officers and of defiance from sailors and soldiers. He looked up. There were holes in several sails. Severed sheets and halyards blew on the wind here and there, and at least 4 or 5 dead men sprawled over the end of the main top, where they'd been marked down by the spitefully cracking rifles of Carizian Marines. Nothing critical seemed to have carried away, though, and even as he watched, topmen were swarming through the rigging, heedless of round shot and bullets alike, to repair the ship's running rigging. They'd never be anything but common-born scum, Rosale thought, all too many of them the sweepings of Garath's gutters. Yet, as he watched them, dragging dead and wounded messmates towards the center of the deck, making repairs in the teeth of the Carizian fire, tossing broken bits of railing and fallen blocks off the breeches of their guns, reloading and firing again and again, he felt a fierce stab of pride in them.
"Lay it to them, lads!" he heard himself shouting. "Lay it to them!"
Captain Stewart swore under his breath, restraining a most uncaptainly temptation to pound a fist on the binnacle as the fury of the artillery exchange mounted. From his own position, astern and still up to windward, he could see darts and shields' masts clearly as their course folded together with the Dolorans. They were in action with 3 of the 5 Doloran galleons now, and the 4th enemy ship was about to pile in. So far, all of Dart's and Shield's rigging seemed intact. Both ships were still under control, and unlike the Dolorans, still firing controlled broadsides. That told Stuart a great deal. Despite the fury of the engagement, despite the fact that they were about to find themselves fighting at 2-to-1 odds, both Powell and Iwane were still firing broadsides, rather than go to independent fire. He suspected each of them was also engaging only a single enemy ship as well, preferring to methodically smash one target at a time rather than split their fire between two targets and inflict lighter damage on both. That took cool nerves, since it meant at least one of their opponents was left undisturbed, her gunners free to load and fire without worrying about round shot or grape shot screaming into their own faces. By the same token, it gave them a far better chance of completely disabling one of their foes relatively quickly. He turned his own attention to the last galleon in the Dolorin line. She seemed to be smaller than the others, little larger than his own undersized squall. Despite that, though, her captain was crowding on more sail as Stuart watched, resetting his courses to get more speed. Obviously, he intended to pile onto dart and shield as quickly as possible.
More gutsy and determined than smart, Stuart thought. Dart and shield are both faster than any of them are. He may be able to overtake with his courses set, but he's only going to cramp their own formation once he gets there. He certainly won't be able to get up to windward of Jean and Harris, whatever he does. In fact, he'll have to haul out of line and run into one of his own consorts.
It was a mistake, although, as mistakes went, it was preferable to a lot of others. At least that other captain was determined to get into action, rather than hold back to avoid it. And that said unpleasant things about the degree to which the Royal Dolorin Navy's morale must have recovered, since Rock Point and Crag Reach.
Well, we'll just have to see what we can do about that, won't we, Arnald? He thought grimly.